Я прошу прощения, что у вас был небольшой перерыв.
I do apologize for you to have to take a longer break after the session with Mr. Lavrov and other distinguished guests. Unfortunately, things like that happen, and I would like to thank all of you who have stayed here and stayed despite the fact that we dragged our feet a little bit with this, but my presentation is going to be partly printed by the neural network, partly by the artists of Tsarigrad, and by you partly. We received their visions of the future from some of you, and that would be an art illustrating what I'm going to be talking about. It. Let's start. First of all, let's talk about a dream, about the world, the beautiful, bright, and great Russia by 2050, at the time when most of you, I'm hopeful, will be living in. And if you are of the age where you cannot expect to live at that time, at least you will be happy for your children and grandchildren. And there will be a time where there will be a family with several generations living together, surrounded by the greenery of our great, wonderful, and resources-rich country, where happiness and good reign, as was in the books by Kir Bulichov. Those of you who are over 40 should know what I'm talking about. These are the videos we made using neural networks to imagine what this bright and wonderful world is going to be like, where we would not see any of the things that are now burdening us, encumbering us. I would like to quote from the inventor of this expression of the Russian dream, a great Russian philosopher, poet, and thinker, and since recently a hero of labor, Alexander Prokhanov. He said that the Russian dream is in harmony, in well-being of all those living in Russia, of all peoples living in Russia, in the grace of all sentient and living beings, so that we can turn this planet and this universe into something ideal. So, similar to the kingdom of the heaven. So, Russia is bordering with the kingdom of the heaven, and our sci-fi writers are saying that our utopia is always with this Christian undertone, which makes us different from the utopias of the Western world. Let's talk about today's world before we get to the future. What is today's world? What does it look like? To begin with, let's state the following. We live at the beginning of a new epoch, the old world of globalist liberalism is over. And that's an important point to make. We need to realize that the 21st century is not going to be like the 20th century. So fascism was over and then communism was over. Now we are at the point where there is the liberalism is over. So we are building the future into the future. Spengler wrote 100 years ago that the European civilization is reaching its eclipse. It's not just a temporary fluctuation. It's an inevitable decline, and we see that decline now. When did Spengler write this? It was not clearly seen at the time. The fates of the world were being decided. The European colonial states were dividing up the world. 100 and more years have passed since then, and the European civilization turned into the Sodom and Gomorrah, where representatives of different non-European identities come, and the Europe that we had read about, the Europe whose stones are so dear to every Russian's heart, is no longer there. Look at these numbers. 7 European countries permitted euthanasia or assisted suicide, as they call it. 7 countries legalized the hardest sin, which is suicide, the most mortal sin, because you cannot repent. That's why suicidal people get to hell. 18 countries allowed sodomite marriages. 18 countries, 62% of MPs of the European Parliament voted not just for the right to abortion, but include abortion as one of the key pan-European values. That's the world that today's Europe is plunging itself into. And of course, the United States is definitely the leader of today's Western world. And the United States were going down that path. They were delving into the depth of Sodom and Gomorrah. But there, the redneck rose against that, the conservative Christian America. They voted for Trump, and America now got a chance. America under Trump will be different. We see what is happening. It's a fight. It's a fight at the level of normalcy. We're no longer living in the world where in the United States they believe that the test number one of the United States is the spread of sodomy, as Secretary Clinton wrote in 2011. By the way, the world of the 21st century will not be just the world of Trump. The center of today's globalist world, Trump is shying away from the Woodrow Wilson doctrine that America should bring all the countries, the democracy and liberalism and other values to the rest of the world. Trump is going back to the Monroe Doctrine, where America is responsible for its own continent, for the Western Hemisphere. And that's why Canada, Greenland aspirations are related to this, because they believe it's their center of and focus of interest. In March of 2021, Foreign Affairs has encryption. One of them is the director of the main think tank of the United States, the Foreign Affairs Commission. So Richard Haass wrote the article called The New Concert of State. And they said that in the 21st century, similar to the 19th century, there will be a new concert of states. And America is not going to be alone there. There will be other centers of force and power. It will be a multipolar world. And in this multipolar world, it will be clearly seen that there would be other states, in addition to the United States, who are still the center of forces and the most powerful and richest of them. And now we have China, which is now the most economically powerful center of power on the planet. And China has a program for development until 2050. It's called the Chinese Dream. The key tool to achieve that is the Belt and Road Initiative. It has already covered 140 countries in the world. China has its own geopolitical project. That's the concept of economic dominance of China. That makes sense, because any center of power in this world in the 21st century has to proceed from the assumption that it is their way that's the right one, while respecting other centers of power and other poles of this multipolar world, realizing that otherwise the planet will be risking the threat of mutual annihilation. So what's about Russia? Russia's economy is not huge. Can Russia, with its smallish economy, be one of such poles of power, one of the key players of the world concert of states in the 21st century? Are we a state or a civilization? Are we the empire? The simple answer is yes, of course. Look at these numbers. Russia is number one in terms of its deposits of gas. We have 30% of the world deposits of coal. We have most forests and rivers. We are number one in terms of ores of metals. We are the richest country in the world. About 20% of the world's natural riches are concentrated in Russia. We have 2% of the global GDP and 20% of the global riches. We need to live 10 times better than we do now, which will allow us to be better. And that's what is supported by our natural riches. And how can Russia and other countries that we have just mentioned, let it be Russia and China, we'll then talk about others as well, how can Russia and China compete with each other in the 21st century? And this brings me to a very important thought that is on the agenda of those who are in power in the United States now. Peter Thiel is the most important of them, the smartest of them. He basically teaches at Stanford. He created the Palantir and created many companies there. And that's the individual that has been writing about progress for a long time, about progress, which is decoupled from competitiveness. We are used to believe that competition is the driver of progress, that people wearing, you know, T-shirts and shorts are the creators. For the individual artist, that's so. But in order to make a breakthrough, a huge leap forward for the civilization, you'd need not small companies or creators who are, you know, loners. We need monopolies or we need states. This is what Peter Thiel says about this. Competition stands in the way of real breakthroughs into the blue ocean, into new areas, because at the highly competitive market, you can invent a gadget slightly lighter, slightly cheaper, with better functions, with more video cameras. But you cannot reject this gadget and make a new one because you would be overwhelmed by the competition. They will not give you this opportunity. That's why no one in competing companies is not geared towards making a breakthrough. But monopolies can do this. Peter Thiel says, let's make the next step and say that states and as a corporation can do this. And China has done this. China is evolving as a state slash corporation with very good plans, with KPIs for achieving the goals, with the responsibility that is similar to that of officers in corporation. That's the only way forward. The autocratic way, which is goal-driven, is the only way that will make sure that Russia can be a competitor with the United States and China if we do not want to be just a natural resources platform. Let's remember how in our history these things were taking place. When did we achieve successes under Vladimir the Saint, who baptized Russia? He used fire and sword to baptize Russia. Ivan the Terrible expanded the boundaries of Russia towards Siberia, beyond the Urals, and he was not a liberal governor. Peter the Great built St. Petersburg, and he forbade building stone buildings across the other Russia, and he brought most carpenters and masons and construction workers to the marshes of St. Petersburg. And the same happened with Generalissimus Stalin, who was able to lift the economy out of poverty and win the war. Let's think about what was happening during the era of the Russian Empire at the beginning of the 20th century when we were an autocratic empire. Well, from Peter the Great until the first census in 1897, the population of Russia had grown 9 times to 126 million. Look at the numbers. In 150 years. And from 1897 to 1984, the population grew by another 50 million, and we didn't add any countries to our country. That was natural.
That's very same time. Thanks to that democratic breakthrough, a breakthrough was done to the industry. Let's have a look at those figures. The industrial output under Nicolae II grew 4.5 times. 4.5 times increased the output of iron cost, 5 times increased the output of copper being melted, and we built 50,000 kilometers of new railways, and new cities were built, such as Murmansk, Yuzhno-Sakhalinsk, and the ones that popped up on the Trans-Siberian Way, and our great road that was built during the World War I, the design of the Crimean Bridge was prepared under Nicholas II. So, and it is on the birthday of the emperor that the first route was to be launched. Back then, and the taxes were low, and for instance, the tax rate was four times less than in the UK. It was the time of the breakthrough. Let us proceed with another breakthrough age. Joseph Stalin. Yes, Stalin started from the low start after the Civil War and the World War One. Let us proceed to book by Galushka, The Crystal of Growth. I'm sure that many of you are familiar with that. Starting from 1929 through 1953, the Russia's economy increased 14 times, and now it became economy number one in Europe and number two in the world, second only to the United States. The generation of power increased 20 times. The production of cast iron and steel increased 11 times. The population grew by 46 million people, and but not for the war, it could have grown by 100 million. So it means that the Stalin's policy rested hinged on the demographic growth. Under Stalin, we prepared our breakthrough in space on April 12, 1961.
Yuri
Gagarin, a Russian guy from Smolensk region, became the first man to go to the space. All those achievements were made proceeding from the demographic breakthrough and with a very stringent autocratic rule of the state that run the country as a corporation. And now, let us move away from that bright picture to today's demographic tendencies, to the today's foundation of our potential breakthrough. In order to make sure that we make that breakthrough by 2050, we have to have at least such figures. No, not like that. These are bad figures. These are the figures that will come if we do not do anything. They're enshrined in the strategic demographic plans of the government proceeding from the Institute of Demographic Research of the Russian Academy of Sciences. And demographers who did that calculation, they didn't care about who will populate the country. There might be biorobots who produce GDP. So for today, this is the kind of a development that we envisage. We are dying out at a pace of 1.4, that's the average birth rate. By 2030, it would be 1.6, and it would be 1.8 by 2036. So it is less than 2.2, which is necessary for their production. And by 2050, it will be no more than 120 million people. And not to damage the economy, 20 million migrants will have to be legalized. This is the plan that is on the table, and that will come true if we do not do anything. With such a plan, certainly, we will not be speaking about any breakthroughs, and certainly, we will not be able to compete on par with the leading civilizations in the 21st century. But we have to do a totally different thing for that. We have to deliver more children. For instance, no, do we have another slide? So I got an impression that this is the Demographic Institute showing the pictures. Yes, yes. We have realized what may happen if we do not do anything. This is how many children we have to have per a woman. And certainly the demographers from the Demographic Institute who did the calculation would say that this is totally unrealistic. But no, there are other scientists who stick to a totally different, a pro-family point of view in the social studies, and they believe that this is possible. Why? Why Russia has a chance unlike Europe? Because the number of children and that we want and the number of children we plan differ. So it means that our mothers and fathers, they want more children than they can deliver. For instance, in men, actually, 2.6 children are planned, and
они бы хотели.
So the number of children that they really deliver is 2.6. In women, this is 2.8 versus 2.3. So it means that we have some cautious optimism that the recent measures taken by the NGOs, by the government, and multiple presidential decrees and executive orders gave us some hope. And by the way, that all changed the expectations of the people. People are planning for more children, but they cannot do that in reality. Why? And the first reason for that, naturally. This is the lack of material support. Then we'll speak about the spiritual component. That's about housing. 75% of population are living in the cities, 33% of them are living in big cities, and they have the on average 48-49 square meters in those new flats. Certainly they cannot deliver more than two kids. So you can have only one child or two children of the same sex. And they have to deliver at least three. And for that, there is also a solution that is very simple. It is a low-hanging fruit. That's an individual residential building. Individual houses would solve that problem. And we were not the first to invent that. In the United States, during baby boom in 1940s, 1950s, all of the United States population would be brought from the barracks and slums to low-rise houses with the schools and the churches. And this is where they had baby boom. And at that time, on the contrary, Khrushchev would bring everyone from the villages, from rural areas to the slums. In order to rebirth, we have to get back to our homes. This is very simple. This is possible. This is possible with the new technologies. And for instance, we can build houses at the house-making factories, and it could be erected within 24 hours. And you can use mortgage, and this is not just like about building houses with 1,000 of apartments, and this was would solve the migrants' problem, because you will not need, actually, millions of migrants in order to build a multi-tenant house after multi-tenant house. Not only you have to build such a house, but finally, you have to grant it as a gift to big family. All the time we say how low the mortgage rate should be, or, for instance, how the principal of the loan has to be decreased in order to do that. And the then governor of Belgorod once did his math, and he said that one citizen of the Russian Federation throughout his working age would bring about 100 million rubles to the Russia's GDP. I have a question. If a family delivered three kids, so it means that they brought about 300 million of GDP. Why cannot we give them 6 million or 8 million rubles in exchange for that? Because we do planning for two or no more than 5 years. Our strategic planning documents are not strategic ones. They are short-term. And those 2-5 years, those children would be just toddlers, and they would be dependent. In a sense that just eating cereals and they're singing songs, they do not do anything good to the economy. They are not even buying anything. These are their parents that are going to buy something. And they will bring fruits only in 20 years. So it means that you can plan the demographic growth for 20 or 50 years. Only then you would realize what economic measures to be taken. Otherwise, this is an unsolvable problem. We will not be able to solve that ever, because once you do 3 or 5 year-long planning, you will use mathematics to confirm that you do not need kids, but you need kids. Because once this generation grows up and retires, become old men, they will be fed by the children who were not born, because we believe that they are not economically efficient. And it is just more efficient to give a mortgage with 40% interest rate to a working migrant who is going to live there, but this is not what we want. And besides, why
большие участки под эти дома.
Don't we give land plots in order to build such houses? Are we short of territories? For instance, Far Eastern hectares. That was a very good project, and it was distributed for free, but actually it was not very popular, because in order to be able to take a land plot in the Far East, for instance, you need a subsidized loan as well. And for instance, we could do the same for Samara region, and if you need a land plot in Moscow, you have to pay for that. If we want to populate the deserted lands, you have to subsidize everything. And in Moscow, you don't have to subsidize. So if you want more land, you have to go 100 or 300 kilometers away from Moscow. A few words about big families, or mothers with a lot of children, those who bring about 300 million rubles, delivering three kids. Why they have to work? Why? We believe that they're not doing anything good to the country once she is bringing up three and more kids. Is it less useful than any other activity? Certainly, this is much more useful. Otherwise, we would die out. We'll be 20 million less by 2050. Only mothers can save us. And for that, they have to actually be taken care of by the state. And the state has to value them and to glorify the labor of mothers, not just in the cartoons, but also in the adult fiction movies. And actually, we have to popularize that politically. Why mothers cannot be paid an average wage in the region once she has delivered three kids? Why such a subsidy, such a benefit cannot be so big? And I know all the arguments. Trust me, I'm a financier, and certainly I can speak a lot about the budget deficit of the Russian Federation, but it just means that we have to revisit the priorities. So we have money, but this money has been spent on other target programs and other federal programs. But demography, this is not just a priority. This is the most important priority. If we do not spend money on that priority, we'll build our roads and houses and hospitals for someone else. Someone else would be walking those roads, and our children would not be delivered, and our grandchildren would not be delivered. Yeah. It means that we have to spend as much as possible on the demography and to glorify the labor of mothers. And certainly, let me say a few words about abortions. Because abortions, this is not just a curse, but this is our sin. This is the Soviet Russia that started abortions in 1922 for the first time. The Bolsheviks deciding that there is nothing sacred about maternity, as unlike the church teaches us, allowed to treat that just a piece of meat, just like some people from the civic chamber say that a child, that's a thing. No, this is not a thing. This is not a commodity. That's an individual. And once you treat a child as a thing, actually, don't be offended if growing up would treat you actually as a thing as well and introduces euthanasia. Why you think that our children would be more moral than us? Abortion, this is a question of the conscience. And in terms of demography, this is the best KPI, because once you cancel and abolish abortions, you have more children, and you will support that with the maternal capital, with subsidies. Not necessarily it would give us children, but once you abolish abortions, it will give us children. I have an example, for instance, in some regions, in 11 regions, the private hospitals are banned to make abortions, and public hospitals are allowed to do that, but they don't have money for advertisement. And in a public hospital, there is a procedure to be followed. So first, a consultation is made, and all the measures are taken in order to talk a would-be mother out of an abortion if she is capable of delivering a child, and if a doctor has some conscience and some moral principles. But the commercial private hospitals do not have any such moral principles. The regions that abolished, that banned abortions,
абортов стало меньше более чем на 20%.
Well, the abortions became 20% less year on year. These are results that are delivered by just simple measures that have to be developed across Russia and has to be taken in the Russian Federation. So, abolition of abortions in private hospitals and criminal prosecution for the advertisement of the abortion devices and prohibition of the coercion or urging to make an abortion and has to result in zero tolerance to abortions. Everyone who wants the abortions to take place there probably believe that it would be much better if Russia is populated by other people, not by us. Our land would belong to someone else. There are other way for us rather than to deliver children and to treat our children as our holiest thing.
Кстати, о моде.
A few words about the fashion to have children, by the way. I have to note that. Whatever I am saying, you may say that it's good to have children, to have families with big families, with lots of children, and that they all live in their own houses. But it is not fashionable. And by the way, what we are being advertised, for instance, Barbie doll, it is a far cry from advertising a little doll that you can put a dummy in the mouth and play being a mother. This is totally different style. In the Soviet Union, propaganda was much better developed than here, but it ended with the collapse of the USSR because Beatles and Rolling Stones were popular, but these things were not popular. That's why when we speak about public programs, enlightenment, education,
моду.
That propaganda has to create a fashion. It has to be cool. It has to be illustrative, colorful.
Моду. Не просто
it has to deduce a fashion, not just about working hours or man hours, or just make an advertisement that it is good to be a Russian and to deliver a lot of children. It has to be fashionable. It means that we have to introduce a fashion for everything Russian-made, homemade. We have to advertisement every now and then. This is a kind of a girl that we have to see on the screens every now and then. Probably you would laugh at that. It seems funny, but if it goes on, if such a girl is shown more often, then probably eventually we'll have the time of fathers and mothers because we have the time of heroes, but we need a yearly program of mothers and fathers. Where can we get those mothers and fathers and those role models? We used to be brilliant, excellent, Orthodox Russia. Where can we get that from? Only from our predecessors, our ancestors that delivered us. I once visited Penza, my motherland, and my grandfather left for the Far East because of hunger, age of 16. And I saw a field of 320 hectares, and you can check Yandex map to see the Malfeil field. This is next to another region that it was plowed by Malafeil family. And every time the Malafeil family had 11 kids, and 320 hectares would be processed, would be farmed only by our family. And now the village, which was 3,200 people strong, now is actually 82. And that's the difference between what used to be 100 years ago and now. Certainly, we have to be inspired by them. We have to learn from them. You don't have to invent anything. It all works. And the second question, understand it that I'm speaking too long, but certainly have to touch upon the second issue, because if we do not spend money on something more than a demography, we would be a very densely populated country, but for someone else, that's about a breakthrough in the area of technologies. In the United States, what is going on is called right tech.
И вот как Питер Тиль говорит,
right technocrats.
Возможен только, соответственно, если вот.
As Питер Тиль said, you can only make a breakthrough if you apply enough energy to that.
На Марс. Соответственно, если
flying to the planet of Mars. If they're talking about Greenland or Canada, they are looking at this as a business project and are working towards that goal. They're looking at that as technocrats. They realize that breakthroughs in science and technology are only possible if you invest in science and technology, if engineers again become the most respected individuals, as was the case in the 1950s and in the 60s. We are still standing on the shoulders of those great inventors. We're still using those technologies. We're still getting proud of them and take pride in them. If we find their works in the archive, the 70 and 80-year-olds are the ones that are aware of what our achievements were back then, and the younger ones are also there, but the middle group is elsewhere.
Yeah.
So, regardless of the fact that we had some hard times, our people are still very talented. So I'm not talking about managers in science, but engineers themselves. So when the special military operations started, which became a war of drones, we started it with just 4 Orlan drones. And now, how many do we have them? In every garage, every talented Russian patriot is tinkering with something there. And inventions are produced by the dozens. And I'm sure that we'll be standing on the shoulders of those inventions that are being created now for 30 years or 40 years. It means that people are still very talented. We lack in management of science. Okay, let's talk about R&D spending. In 2024, Russia spent 720 billion rubles, or 0.6% of Russia's GDP, with the budget of 720. And Israel, it's 6%. In South Korea, it's 5% of GDP. So in China, it's 268. Half of that are private, and half of that are state-funded. In order to see some growth here, it's not enough to say that the state needs to spend more. It needs to lower the threshold. Not from 21 to 20, but to 2% for the IT engineers and experts in computer science, so that they would know that you're spending something on them. Because it's hard to recoup investment if you have a rate of 20% of tax on your inventions. I would like to quote from Sergei Glazyev at this point. He said that in order for the GDP to grow at the pace, at the rate that would allow us to be competitive or stay competitive, to still be a great powers of the 21st century, we need to invest in R&D, because it's the money that is invested in R&D can return us achievements and breakthroughs in the military, the technologies, a hundredfold. That's a fact. Now, let's talk about space exploration, another area where we need to invest. We shouldn't be forgetting about this, because as we try to get into the space, we've achieved the previous breakthrough 60 years ago. It was this aspiration that took us there, because our spending on the space gets replicated to all other industries, new materials, medicine, healthcare, engine building, nuclear physics, the study of gravitation and gravity, other technologies. All of that is the result of space exploration. Until recently, the Americans were using RD-80 engines. In Troitsk, they built a prototype of the plasma engine. If it starts working, of that portable nuclear industry that was on Burevestnik. Remember that 2018 presentation by Vladimir Putin. If such an engine could work, the flight to Mars could only last 3 to 4 months. That means that by 2035, the period of our closest proximity to Mars, we could take a flight there, and we could become the greatest space state again. We have the technology. We just need to turn our face towards it. The son of Errol Musk said this about the flight to the Mars. I believe that we need to take this challenge, accept this challenge, and we have to do this. We need to start our own Mars exploration program, not just because we want to explore Mars, but to propel technologies forward, not just because we don't have anything to do here. If the United States and China want to do this together, then we will do this with someone else. the calculations of NASA say that $400 billion are needed, but our expenses on defense is 200 times lower than the EU. But when we look at the ammunition on the battlefield and the drones, it looks like it's the same. So it is cheaper here, so we don't need $400 billion. Even if no one helps us with that, we would still be able to do this in 10 years, but that will give a very fantastic boost to the acceleration of all of our technologies development. And this will be done by those who are 25, 30, 35 years of age, because you want to be a part of this feat. We are the nation of a feat. We cannot live without feats and exploits. In addition, as far as technology goes, we have the hypersonic technologies, something that Mr. Putin spoke when he demonstrated Oreshnik, Poseidon, and Burevestnik. We saw hypersonic weaponry working in Dnepropetrovsk, and we hope it will be working soon, something that Donald Trump alluded to. Plus, this can give us a new breakthrough in electronics and quantum technologies and math, chemistry, and physics. Our country is the richest country in the world in terms of its mineral resources. Technologies are therefore crucial for us as we study the gravitational field using quantum technologies will allow us to find the deposits of minerals, rare earth metals, that would give us a fantastic breakthrough. We're a huge country and we need this technology. If we're able to extract these 20% of our natural resources of the world, then we will increase our GDP from 2% to 20% of the world's. And these are the technology that are our path forward to the well-being of the next generation. And finally, let's talk about robotics and AI, and that'll be the end of my technology part, and I will get back to the humanitarian field. Let's talk about robots. Let's not talk about energy, just focus on the robots. Let's skip through this one. We know that we are ahead of the curve as far as the nuclear physics. That's a nice robot, a kind Russian robot, painted using the gel patterns, much better than a protein-based migrant. Doesn't rape anyone, doesn't kill anyone, speaks Russian. And there are no problems with that. Let's have a robot. I've seen a lot of pizza delivery people from Yandex. Well, and they cannot, I mean, if it's a box, it's a robot, it cannot attack anyone. Of course, I know it can get out of control, but it's a machine. You can program it properly. By 2050, whether we want it or not, there will be about 1 billion robots on the planet, according to forecasts. 90% of industry will be robotics-driven. You see, they are standing over there. And you know, how many robots do we have and how many does the rest of the world have? We have 29 robots per 10,000 workplaces. And we don't have enough people. But in South Korea, it's 1,100. And in Singapore, it's 770. And in China, with a population of 1.5 billion, they also have 170. And we only have 29 per 10,000 workers. We need more. Because that way, we are going to have high technology production. Our science and our technologies will develop that way. And we're not going to be, you know, giving up our identity. That's why we are not going to be looking at those demographics reports saying that there's no one to deliver stuff. We could use UAVs, you could use delivery robots, especially if we start building 3D printed houses that are low rises instead of high rises. So that's why we need this kind and good Russian AI. See, this is AI. That's what AI drew, the way it perceives itself. But what should our AI have in its head? Because programs are written by people, and they want to tell us that they want to convince us that what the AI tells us is the truth, because they have their own agenda. We have different chatbots telling us different things. OpenAI versus ChatGPT. It's all based on the various different meanings that people put in into their prompts. That's what the French enlighteners did in the 18th century. For the first time in Christian Europe, they described the world and the worldview that is possible without a God. They wrote this in 18th century, and then the French Revolution started, because it all started with the encyclopedia. So what the artificial intelligence says is very important. We have to develop our own. We cannot use others. We need a domestic one. And let's move on to the books. So the AI should include the thoughts of our great thinkers. The mind of the AI should be based on the Christian values. We're a Christian country. Let's skip through a few slides. That's not it. AI is probably drawing these pictures for me on its own, preventing me from talking about the meanings and senses. So the AI should include our ideas, gospel-based, Orthodox Christianity-based. I'll continue without the slides.
Должно быть Пушкин и
Достоевский. The AI should have Pushkin and Dostoevsky.
И Циолковский.
And Mendeleev and Циолковский deep within its mind. Dugin has to be there, and not. And not.
Ной Харири.
Yuval Noah Harari. Fukuyama and other people that we don't need. And Peter Thiel shouldn't be there either. Let them use Peter Thiel, but we will use Dugin and Dugin's thoughts. Now let's talk about breakthrough management, and that's the last thought. And I will stop. I will finish my presentation. I talked about... They've already seen the bridge. Please, stop it.
What?
That's the one. Let's talk about the breakthrough management. In order to manage as they did in the Stalin's era, in the Peter the Great era, or in Nicholas II era, the mechanisms of management should be the same, and the goals that are set should be such that we would plan for 3 years, for 5 years, and if the plans are not met, then the management should be changed, and people should give way to those who can do this. If you turn this out or find this out earlier than that, then you do this earlier. Do this sooner. Why is this possible in big corporation, but why is it not possible in a state? Why do we call it politics? We don't need that. It has no sense. We need a breakthrough. Otherwise, we're not going to survive. And it doesn't matter whether democratic procedures are complied with or not. It's very important to know whether we have reached the level of well-being that we wanted to achieve are not. And that's why we need to have accountability. Because we need very strict management. And it's impossible to do anything without it. China is managed in exactly that way. American breakthroughs were achieved in exactly that way. They had the Mississippi Development Corporation or the Alaska when they were only entering those territories. We had similar companies when we were developing Siberia and the Far East in pre-revolutionary times. And we need to look at the state as a corporation, and therefore we need to operate in a similar way. It doesn't mean that everything has to be owned by the state, but the goals they set should be harmonized with that, and the accountability should be very similar, because it's a great honor to work towards achieving a state set goal. And finally, let's go back to this wonderful young woman on the picture. If we put demographics and technological breakthrough at the top of our list of priorities, if we start training engineers, we want to make engineering trendy, if we want to see our children as inventors, as scientists who want to travel and conquer new territories, it's then that we're going to be able to raise a new generation. It is very important that the 20-year-olds today would understand that there is no future for such professions as the economist, lawyer, and so on. The future is with the IT experts and engineers. Change your profession if you have the time. If your children were recently born, make sure that they go down the path that I've outlined. Make engineers out of them instead of lawyers and economists. This is our future. We need to become again the great space state or power. And that would guarantee that we would have a great future where we'd have the right, bright and great Russian country, Russian Empire, which would be the motherland for our children. Thank you.